This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Sammy Marks Kors and Chris Ranji on KMOX. Hour two of the show. We do three of them. And then we hang out for an hour with Dave Glover in the 1 o'clock hour. It is Monday after 11 o'clock, and on this day we have a regular friend who joins the show, political commentator and author of the daily newsletter, So What? Chris Cillizza is with us on KMOX. You've probably seen Chris on CNN. He's been all over the place, and he's with us now. How's it going, Chris?
I always introduce myself as, you've probably seen me on TV, even as strangers.
Hi.
If
you're having a customer service issue, do you say, have you seen me on television?
Do you know who I am?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Happy
if you
President's
know.
President's Day, guys.
Happy President's Day. I know. We were actually just talking to a professor at Washington University in St. Louis about presidents in general, the office, and the day. How are you celebrating?
Well, did you talk about my favorite president conversation, which is handsomest president?
Oh.
You didn't talk to the professor about that?
No.
It's the best conversation. It's a debate between
Kennedy?
Young Millard Fillmore, Kennedy, and Franklin Pierce.
Was Franklin Pierce good looking?
Oh, my gosh. Franklin Pierce is great looking.
Let me see. Oh, yeah. I could see that.
Young Millard Fillmore looks like Alec Baldwin, like a creepy amount. Like, he looks exactly like Alec Baldwin.
All right.
Like, you think it's Alec Baldwin in period dress.
Oh, yeah. Because I'm looking
at... You see what I'm saying?
Well, I'm looking at old Millard Fillmore, and he looks like current Alec Baldwin.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Wow. Okay.
Have you seen... That, I don't know if you follow football, but Drew Brees, the former quarterback for the Saints, looks exactly like a young Rutherford B. Hayes.
He does.
It's
I have
insane.
Seen that before. It's uncanny.
It's uncanny.
Yes. This is what I spend a lot of my time doing. Yes.
See, I think this humanizes the political analyst. People
also,
think
also
you know,
Franklin Pierce, by the way, only president born in New Hampshire. And there's a college named after him. Okay, that's
did
and
you,
I am now
did you
out
learn
of Franklin
all,
Pierce trivia.
Did you learn all this about him because he's attractive?
No. Anyway, you probably didn't want to talk about Franklin Pierce in today's segment.
Actually, I don't want to talk about anything else now, to be honest.
He's Franklin Pierce to my heart.
Oh, God. Political pundit, political commentator Chris Cillizza is with us on KMOX. Been a pretty busy week, I suppose, for the Doge Committee that has been headed by Elon Musk. And it is... It's disrupting in a big way, and there are people who are fans of the current president who are happy about this. People who are not fans of him and not fans of Elon Musk are not happy about this. So What has the reaction been, you know, from the people who are observing this and trying to do so in an unbiased way? How is this going over?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I think is really challenging with covering Donald Trump is there's almost no one you meet who is like, well, I don't really know how I feel about him. You know what I mean? It's sort of like everyone has a very strong opinion. And I think that goes all the way down to sort of what he does. You know, are the executive orders he's issued good? Is DOGE good? Is his immigration policy good? It's all sort of a piece. You know, I will tell you, I think it is a little bit different living and working in Washington because so many people my kids play basketball with, people, you know, they're all part of the federal workforce. And so you're seeing a lot of people very uncertain and very stressed out. And so I see it more on a human level. I think if you don't live in and around Washington, you probably think like, oh, those bureaucrats, they're lazy. They don't do anything. Like, get rid of them. So I think it's like, I think I am in a little bit of a bubble because I see this stuff kind of on a daily basis. And most of these people, I mean, look, the federal government is like any other organization. Of course, there are people in programs that could be gotten rid of. Of course. I tend to think the kind of meat cleaver approach that Elon Musk is using is a little bit, and the glee with which he is getting rid of these people is unseemly, whether you think we should treat the government or not. But again, I sort of recognize I am in a bubble because I live in a place where, you know, the federal government is a gigantic employer.
Yeah, you know, and there are some real issues, and this gets frustrating to me because obviously, for instance, illegal immigration was a big deal. CBS poll leading up to the election showed 74% of Americans were really concerned about the chaos at the southern border and illegal immigration. So obviously, it's something we need to address. President Trump, right, I think, intentionally is chaotic or takes a meat cleaver or says outlandish things that will hit the headlines that really obfuscate the main point of what needs to be taken care of. So instead of focusing on a so-called worst first scenario, like, hey, if there are gang members, right, we need to go after the criminals. Yep. It's like, let's get rid of the 14th Amendment. And it totally muddies the water and sucks all the oxygen away from a real conversation. So have you been able to, in these muddied waters, have you been able to parse anything and say, okay, you know, I guess there were 10 members of this really bad, I think it was a Venezuelan or Guatemalan, or Venezuelan gang, I should say. And you know, okay, good. We got the gang members out, but then you don't hear, it gets completely overrun by some of the, like, we're going into schools. Have you been able to parse through some of that?
It's very challenging, I will admit, because it's also hard to know how much is rhetoric and how much is actually happening. Like, for example, the birthright citizenship, you mentioned the 14th Amendment. So I don't see any way, and I am neither a constitutional expert nor a lawyer, so take what I say with a grain of salt, but I don't see any way that winds up holding up in court. Because it is in the Constitution that there's that if you're born here, you're a citizen. And so, you know, for me, I kind of put that one on the back burner a little bit because I feel like, okay, this is going to wend its way through the courts and we'll see. But everyone I talk to who is smart about this stuff says that one is not going to work. That really appears to be a political ploy kind of to make his base happy, aimed at, couched in a legal strategy, if that makes sense. The other stuff, you know, is challenging. And we saw this during the campaign as it related to immigration. You know, I feel like there was a time, and I'm 48, there was a time when I was in journalism where you could sort of agree broadly on the numbers. You could debate what the numbers meant, but you could agree broadly on the numbers. And I felt like during this campaign and certainly in the administration so far, it's like we can't even agree, like, okay, how many people are being deported? Where are they going? Have they committed a crime? Are there ICE agents waiting outside schools? Like, it feels, I hate this word, but I'm going to say it because I think it describes where we are, it feels like we're almost in this like post-facts environment where it's like you can find a number or a quote unquote fact that enforces your point of view. And I will tell you, as someone who's trying to steer kind of an independent, objective way through this, it's really challenging. Like, I'm just trying to find, okay, what do we know? Right? What are the facts that we know? Take away all what Donald Trump says, take away all what Democrats say about him. What do we know? And I will tell you, it is surprisingly hard on immigration specifically, but on a lot of issues to sort of find that. And I find that somewhat depressing.
Chris Ciliza is with us here on KMOX, political commentator. Daily newsletter is called So What? And we're talking to him again. And I'm thinking about all these federal agencies that have been either slashed or completely shuttered and wondering what the unintended consequences are. For example, there were the 300 or so nuclear weapons workers who were fired. And I guess DOGE didn't realize these people are monitoring our nuclear stockpiles of weapons, which seems like important. Yeah, it seems like important work. So it seems like there's a lot of unintended consequences of what's happening here. But it also kind of seems like they really don't know what they're looking at when they're cutting all these jobs. They're just looking at numbers.
Yes, I think okay, so I have a couple thoughts. One, I think it is numbers on a spreadsheet, literally. It's like, well, why do we have five of these? Why can't we do it with two? I mean, I would recommend a couple things. One, people should go back and read the stories written right after Elon Musk took over Twitter. Obviously, he then changed the name to X, but when he took over Twitter, he cut 70% of the workforce there. And I think that is very much the model he is using right now. So I would recommend to people, if you want to try to understand what's happening now, go back, and it's not that 2 years ago, I think, go back and read those stories. The other thing on unintended consequences, I came across this weekend. There's a wonderful Wall Street Journal piece about the USAID cuts, Agency for International Development, which was sort of the first target of DOGE and has been decimated. What they did is they mapped where people work for USAID, and you would assume, oh, it's all a bunch of Washington bureaucrats. In truth, it is not. That map is available. You don't even need to be a subscriber to the Wall Street Journal. Just search it. It is a lot of people in red states and red congressional districts. And so this is what I'm wondering is, like, what does it look like in the kind of medium term? Like, yeah, sure, getting rid of federal waste, fraud, and abuse is popular. Of course. I mean, you know, like, who's against, like, all these federal employees who do nothing all day? The problem is when you use a sort of shotgun approach and you're just spraying fire, you hit a lot of people who do good work and or are experts in their field. I mean, remember, most of the people in the civil service are people who are not political in any way, shape, or form. Like, they're not political appointees. They're just people who are really experts at one little thing that there's probably 15 people in the country or the world who are experts at, right? So if you get rid of them, I guess there are 14 others, but if you get rid of 13 of those people, then that becomes more problematic. So I think there's going to be a long tail to this, and the unintended consequences, I think, are going to be a huge piece of that story. We're already seeing some of it. I think we'll see more as they continue to cut.
You know, something kind of interesting happened with the Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth. Of course, he used to be a political commentator on Fox. And the National Review actually had a quick hit about what they call the limits of punditry and statecraft, meaning there was real significance when Pete Hegseth suggested on Wednesday of last week that Kyiv should abandon hopes of winning all of its territory back from Russia. Now, if you're a political pundit, it's one thing for me to say it, going, man, I don't think this is going to happen. But if you're the Secretary of Defense, there's a whole lot more weight behind your words and could be destabilizing. What was your take on that? And he did have to walk that back.
Yeah, look, I mean, one thing, I think all of this is from the top down. I really do. So look, I remember in 2016, kind of Donald Trump would occasionally say, like, and I'm paraphrasing, but he would say something like, I'm going to be so presidential, you'll be bored, right? And the insinuation was, okay, well, I'm kind of acting like a celebrity reality TV star here, but if I'm elected president, I'm going to be totally different. Like, I'm going to be serious, and I get the gravitas of the office. And the truth of the matter is he didn't. Now, I would argue that's a lot of his appeal. People kind of like that he doesn't treat it the way that, like, George W. Bush did, or Barack Obama did, or Jimmy Carter did. You know what I mean? They like that. But Donald Trump, I would argue, has never really made any change between how he behaved as kind of a celebrity on the outside, kind of offering commentary, and how he behaves as president, right? Like, look at his Truth Social feed. I mean, you know, he's commenting on Taylor Swift getting booed at the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? Like, and so to me, Trump has never really understood that. So I don't know why we would think he would pick someone who understood that. And so I was not surprised by Hegseth, because I think that's going to keep happening. You're exactly right. Look, I was on cable TV for a long time, as I tell any stranger who comes up to me. And one of the things that I learned is, like, you know, yes, you can get in trouble for what you say. But, like, if I say something, it's not like Iran is like, oh, you know, whereas if you're the Secretary of Defense, what you say matters. If you're the President of the United States, what you say matters. Donald Trump can move markets. Donald Trump can change other countries' foreign policy, right? I mean, and I think it's the one of the things I struggle with is it appears either they don't know that or they don't care, and I don't know which one it is, but that's challenging because words matter when you're in a position of significant power like Donald Trump and like Pete Hegseth.
Chris Ciliza, in one of his most recent newsletters, wrote about what the left is getting wrong about the current Trump administration and how to handle it. I would suggest going to read it. The newsletter is called So What? It comes out every day. Political commentator Chris Ciliza with us. We appreciate you as always, and we'll talk to you again on Monday.
Thanks, guys. Happy President's Day. Take care.
You too.
See you, Chris. That is Chris Ciliza with us. Again, every Monday he joins us after the 11 o'clock news. The that hockey game happened over the weekend, and apparently it was madness. Mm-hmm. And apparently the Canadians...
And apparently
the Canadians had a reaction that some of us in the country didn't like. We'll tell you about it next on KMOX.
Dawn's early light was so proud.
National anthem at the Bell Center in Montreal before the Canada-USA game in the Four Nations Cup. And if you're wondering, what in the world is the Four Nations Cup? That's okay. It's the first time they've had it. It replaced the All-Star Weekend for the NHL. And that particular game was the United States versus Canada. The other two are Sweden and Finland in the Four Nations Cup. And it is the NHL All-Stars facing off against each other. This did not have the feel of an exhibition. This had the feel of like the final Olympics, the final international game that would ever be played. Now, the Canadian audience in the Bell Center, and yes, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was in attendance, they booed, as you heard, during the entire national anthem. And the USA team did not take kindly to that. Granted, I think it would have been a chippy game anyway. John Cooper, who was the head coach of Team Canada, had said, he goes, this was like 10 years of no international hockey, like all piled into a pressure cooker and it just exploded. But yeah, the current political climate absolutely, I think, contributed to the way each team felt donning their sweaters. And it was one of the best hockey games, if not the best hockey game I've ever seen. Three fights in the first 9 seconds after the opening faceoff. Both Tkachuks, right? Matthew and Brady Tkachuk, absolutely repping USA. And then St. Louis represented in Colton Parayko in the third fight, I believe. Maybe it was the second.
What did Cooper say about...
Yeah, he said the game is in a better place.
Yeah.
Because last night's game took place, meaning the one that was this weekend.
I think it might be a one-off in that way, just because it's very politically charged right now. I wouldn't ascribe to it any sort of greater meaning, like, oh, hockey is back because of it. It was what it was in the moment and pretty great. I don't... I'm sorry, but I don't blame the Canadian people for doing that.
No.
We would do the exact same thing if the Prime Minister of Canada was telling us that we don't do enough for them and that they should annex us. And I get it. Yeah. We're a little more of a powerful nation than Canada is. But it doesn't matter. You don't want to hear that about your country that you live in. I would boo the hell out of us, too.
Yeah, the 51st state and all of that. No, I get it. Like I said, I was still proud of Team USA and all of that because, again, at the end of the day, it is a hockey game and you're donning the USA sweater. We're Americans. The Tkachuk boys, the sons of Keith Tkachuk, who played in St. Louis. Keith Tkachuk, I believe the first American, United States American hockey player ever inducted into the Hall of Fame. I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's true. And their mom's from Canada. And so Matthew was asked, like, would you ever represent Canada? He's like, never. Never. I'm American through and through. And so it was just fun to see them. And they're hard to play against no matter what. And it... they interviewed another NHL player. I apologize for getting on his name. He goes, it's annoying facing one of them. I can't imagine what it's like playing both of them Matthew and Brady Tkachuk. But no, the game's not back in the sense that it was never here. Hockey will never compete with Major League Baseball and the NFL and the NBA. However, I say this a million times, I'm a fan of spectacles, and it was a spectacle, and there were some new eyes on the game. And whether it just reminded people who were already fans how great the game is, or maybe it brought a few new eyeballs, the game is better. It's not worse. It's better for having had that game.
Oh, yeah. No, totally. For the spectacle, it was great. And I would love to think that it would propel the sport a little bit more. I don't think it's going to. To me, it was more than anything. The thing that stood out to me was the political nature of it. And for the people who love to say, keep politics out of sports, I don't want to see it. Sports has never really been completely devoid of politics.
Oh, no.
It just hasn't. I know that for a lot of people, it's an escape or whatever they like to say, but one of the most popular games, the most historic games we've ever had, was one of the most highly politically charged games ever, and it was the Miracle on Ice. So,
well, it was so much fun. And yeah, no, I mean, I can see why Canadians were upset. I totally get it. I mean, I'm pretty sure we've booed Canadians before when the prime minister said something unflattering about Trump in the first go round.
Yeah.
So you boo each other. It's what you do.
Amy Markscores, Chris Ranji. When we come back, we're going to talk about spring training because today on this February 17th, the Cardinals have their first full team workout in Jupiter, Florida, and Matt Pauly will join us from Florida next.
I mean, obviously, there's been a lot going on this offseason, and, there was, a lot of truths out there. There was some lies out there. I try not to get caught up into it too much. I really focus on just getting ready for the season, and that's about it. There was a lot of things going on. There was always a possibility of me getting traded, and there was a possibility of me coming back, and I'm back, and I'm ready to go play ball.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 40% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale Last Chance right now and save up to 40% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 40% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
That is the voice of Nolan Arenado, who is in Cardinals camp and is getting ready for the 2025 season when we did know there was a pretty good chance he would get traded during the offseason. It has not happened, at least not yet. It is time to go to the guest line this morning, and we bring in the host of Sports Open Line here on KMOX and Countdown to Opening Day, which is happening until we get to opening day. Cardinals pre- and post-game coverage as well. Matt Pauly is with us. Matt Pauly is brought to you by...
We are brought to you by St. Louis Composting, Growing Gardens and Making Memories, and by Norm's Bargain Barn and Wilkie Window and Door, as we appreciate them and all the spring training coverage here on KMOX.
Well, we do very much, especially today, because this is the first full team workout, and... as I mentioned, and as you just heard from, that's Nolan Arenado, who's a member of the Cardinals. And this must be, for him, a little bit strange. Of course, this is a business. All the players know that. But to be in flux and to not really know where you're going to be and then show up to camp to the place you weren't quite sure you were going to be, it's got to be a little bit of an adjustment.
I don't know. You know, like, I understand why you're saying that. I think there's a lot of common sense to what you said, but he said that, you know, he was always mentally prepared to return to the Cardinals. He knew it was never a sure thing that he was going to be traded, and that as he was on his flight in, he basically adjusted himself being ready to go. So I think from like a surface level common sense standpoint, you would think that it would be kind of weird, but I'm telling you, talking with him, talking with Mo, talking with Ali, I don't think there's any weirdness, any awkwardness, any of that. They're all just, he's a Cardinal, he's been a Cardinal, he's going to continue to be a Cardinal.
For now, so is your gut feeling that he'll at least start the season with the team, there won't be any sort of last minute deal?
Yeah, I do. I mean, now an injury or something obviously could always change that. But if right now is the status quo and nothing that would precipitate renewed contract talks happens, I don't think anything's going to change. He indicated that the teams that he has on his list that he'd be willing to go is not going to change. So that would tell you that all those options have been exhausted and it is done for now.
So... just so I understand, too, when you say for now, does that mean we should expect him, as you said, he's going to play some games with the Cardinals, but will be gone by the trade deadline? Or do you think he's going to play this whole season?
I think it's kind of a 50-50 proposition. And look, this thing has not gone down the way that I thought it was going to go down. I was on record on this show of thinking that he was going to be traded before the new year. And then that didn't happen. They had a trade worked out with Houston, and he rejected it. But I think right now, everybody's ready to kind of pump the brakes for a little bit. And I got the sense from John Mozeliak that this really wore him down, just dealing with this constantly. If somebody calls up the Cardinals and wants to re-engage in talks, they can do that. would say right now the Cardinals are not actively doing anything that would result in Arenado being traded, and I would suspect it's going to stay that way. Now, if there are some needs of teams come trade deadline time, then maybe those talks happen again. But you got to remember, he's got 3 years left on his deal, so this is not a situation where if he gets traded at the deadline, he's going to go play, you know, 3 months for another team and then hit free agency where he gets to choose again. He still is going to be in a spot where he's going to only want to be traded to a place that he's comfortable with. So again, as right now where we sit, those teams that he would be open with, open to, there's not a spot for that to happen. So could he be traded at the deadline? Sure. Could he spend the entire season with the Cardinals? I think that is just as plausible.
So John Mozeliak yesterday spoke and called where the Cardinals are right now a more of a transition than a reset. Do you see much of a difference in those two things?
Yeah, I do, because from a transition is what's happening is next year, Chaim Bloom is the president of baseball operations, and he's going to be making all of the baseball decisions, and some of those are going to be decisions that look different than what John Mozeliak would do. That being said, Bloom is already in the organization, and a bunch of Bloom hires are already in the organization, but it's a baseball operation that's still being led by Mo. So you've got this weird hybrid thing going on with some Bloom people and some Mo people in there, and then going into next year, it's going to be all Bloom. So this is the transitional period. I think that's what they're talking about. When we talk about the reset, we're talking more about on the field and giving as much runway as possible to young players and all these things, which honestly, I mean, that's still going to happen to a certain extent because they still want to give Nolan Gorman 550, 600 at-bats. The same thing with Jordan Walker. But some of the younger guys that you thought would get a big opportunity, someone like Thomas Tsejasi, that opportunity isn't sitting there. So, you know, when they talk about, it's not a reset, it's a transitional year. The reset, I think, was more based off what was happening on the field, which just can't happen quite as much as they would like, where the transition is more about organizational philosophy.
Matt Pauly is with us on KMOX. Okay, so now that today the first full team workout happening officially, what should we be paying attention to as we begin camp and get ready for the first game, which is this weekend?
Yeah, I think the first thing is, you know, where are the battles for jobs going to come from? And watching what happens with relief pitching, because Andrew Kittredge isn't around anymore. There are going to be some high leverage innings that are up for grabs, and what pitchers are going to put themselves in position to be able to grab some of those high leverage spots. I also think how often we see Lars Nootbaar in center field during Grapefruit League play is key as well, because for this team to be the best version of its run scoring self, you probably have to play Nootbaar in center field a fair amount so you can put Donovan in left and Gorman at second, because Arenado's going to be at third, and then you want to have Burleson at the DH in those spots. But there's going to be times where they have a Michael Ciani, or if he makes the team, a Victor Scott in center field. That might limit your run scoring ability. And then watching how much better offensively Pedro Páez might be and how much better defensively Ivan Herrera might be, because there's going to be a legit competition for playing time between those two catchers.
All right, Matt Pauly, I think that we'll continue to talk with you, obviously, about the Cardinals and spring training. Amy is very excited about all the people punching each other last night.
It was, or two nights ago.
Yep.
So the Four Nations face-off, and so everyone knows, again, the United States beat Canada, and so they will be in the championship game. Canada and Finland have just hit the ice, and a regulation win for either team, either Canada or Finland, will secure them in a spot in the championship game against the United States. So that's going on right now. And Matt Pauly, I said that this was perhaps the best hockey game as far as fun goes. One of the most fun hockey games I've ever watched. John Cooper, head coach for Team Canada, said that the sport is in a better place because that game existed a couple of nights ago. Both Tkachuk brothers got into fights. Colton Parayko got into a fight for Team Canada. All three fights happened 9 seconds after the opening faceoff.
Yeah.
Did you get to catch it?
I saw much of it, and I think Cooper's right. That was especially when, and I know this is a tournament, this is not an all-star game per se, but especially with the optics of the Pro Bowl just being terrible in the NFL and what happened with the NBA all-star game, for the NHL to be able to put the spotlight on its sport in this tournament, have a game like that, that was the number one thing seemingly that everybody was talking about. It was really awesome. Now, that being said, we see moments like this in the NHL playoffs every single year, and we all think that, okay, this is going to be the thing that's going to draw more people to the game, and unfortunately, it's not happening. I mean, NHL ratings this year on ESPN are basically the lowest they've ever been. The Winter Classic, they moved the time slot this year, but that was the lowest rated Winter Classic. I mean, NHL TV ratings right now are terrible, and as much as I would love for a game like that to draw more overall interest to the sport, I'm very cynical when it comes to that, because we see the hockey playoffs are probably the best playoffs of the four major sports, and a lot of people watch them, but that never translates into more people watching it in the regular season.
Yeah, I know. I will say this, man. If people say keep politics out of sports, I'd say put it back in, because that was a hell of a game. You boo the national anthem, you levy some tariffs, and what do you get? You get all-stars throwing haymakers. Maybe the NHL needs politics in sports. And again, as John Cooper also rightly pointed out, that was a pressure cooker of, what, over a decade of no international best-on-best play. And so, of course, there you're going to be playing for pride. But you got to throw the NHL a bone every now and then, and that was fun. And there were, at least online, non-hockey accounts, political accounts, every account was tweeting about that game, and that was fun to see.
Yeah, it was a really, really good night for the sport. Let's not make it bigger than it is, but let's also acknowledge it for what it is.
I'm making it bigger than it is.
Yeah.
This will be big to me.
Yeah.
You got to give me something, Matt.
I thought I did.
Well, it was...
You want more.
Don't be so parsimonious with what you're giving. Well, it was a lot of fun. And you know what? But the Tkachuk brothers, too. I think that's why it's a big deal in St. Louis. It's fun. You know, a couple of kids that grew up in St. Louis lighting up the national stage. That was fun.
I saw a T-shirt online yesterday that said, Tkachuk around and find out. And I really like that. I kind of want that
good
shirt.
That's actually really good.
You had them? Yeah. You had them involved in all those fights. You had John Hamm on the SNL 50th anniversary thing. Like, we're everywhere, man.
Wait, no, St. Louisans hate John Hamm right now. Remember the Super Bowl? We're not allowed to claim John Hamm anymore.
Why? Because he had the Chiefs stuff on?
Yeah, no, because he introduced the Chiefs onto the field. So, you know,
what are you talking about?
St. Louisans.
This is like Chiefs territory here. We're the home of the Chiefs.
I'm being facetious if you can't tell.
I'm on your side, Matt, because I think he wore too many scarves during the
Stanley Cup. I love John Hamm's scarves.
Look,
I love them.
He was my Taylor Swift during the 2019 Stanley Cup playoff run. Like, oh, yeah. Okay, we get it. John Hamm's there. We get it. And I love John Hamm.
Hey, I want to move real quick before we say goodbye to you. There was an awesome moment over the weekend, probably not for the guy who is at the center of it, but Terrence Shannon Jr. was an Illinois basketball player and had his jersey retired.
Oh.
And so they're pulling up the jersey. They unveil it from the rafters. The damn thing's upside down. Yeah. They have it upside down, and the crowd was gasping like, oh, my God, how in the world did that happen? And I know their athletic director, Whitman, I can't think of his first name, Josh Whitman, said that there were spirited discussions during halftime, which means there were people who got chewed out over that.
Okay, so he came to the media room and he wanted to talk before Brad Underwood, and he went on kind of I wouldn't say it was a rant, an almost rant about this. And I understand his frustration and his embarrassment, because it is embarrassing, but I feel like, man, he went in a little too far on that. Like, it was a mistake that was made and it stunk. But that he really went on. They should turn this into like a marketing opportunity. They should do like upside down jersey day.
Oh, sure.
Year.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they should do stuff like that. It's an unfortunate thing. I'm sure Shannon is understanding of it, you know, and they got it turned around eventually. So again, embarrassing in the moment, but you would have thought that like, the athletic department just lost 17 of their sports or something when based off the way he was talking afterwards.
I get it in the moment. I get it in the moment because you're probably thinking, oh, we just ruined this kid's moment. He's not a kid anymore. He's an adult. But we ruined this guy's moment. He's standing there and he pulls the cord and the jersey's unveiled and it's upside down. So he looks like he's probably embarrassed for himself. So I get that. But you're right. You got to turn that into something. You have got to use that if you're the university.
100%. You should. But they won't because they're taking themselves a little bit too seriously on this one.
All right, Matt Pauly, who's on Sports Open Line tonight?
Yeah, so we only have 1 hour leading into the SLU coaches show. So what we're really going to do is we're going to dive in to what Nolan Arenado had to say. And just, you know, we're going to finally put a bow on this entire Arenado situation so we can say goodbye to the off-season narrative during tonight's Sports Open Line.
All right, buddy. Talk to you Wednesday.
Sounds good.
Matt Pauly, host of Sports Open Line. Tonight starts at 6 o'clock before the SLU coaches show. Also, do not forget that we do have our first spring baseball game at noon on Saturday when the Cardinals play the Marlins. It is actual Grapefruit League baseball. It's the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. The chickens are dying. They are dying. This is the humanity. It's a very bad situation because of the bird flu, and because of it, our egg stock has been dramatically affected. So we thought here on the Chris and Amy Show, we would keep you updated until no longer necessary about what is happening with eggs with a feature we like to call the egg beat. All right, Amy, the egg produces Central Union of Turkey.
Okay, the egg producers, Central Union of Turkey. The country or the bird?
The country.
Because you can see how that would be confusing.
They have announced in a preliminary agreement that they are going to export approximately 15,000 tons of eggs to the United States by June. U.S. egg imports have increased.
Be careful with that shipment.
They have... How do you ship eggs?
You wrap each one in the little the plastic wrap.
You have to, like you're moving.
And like all of a sudden there's rough weather at sea. Oh no, sir!
That's my good China.
They're sliding back and forth. The entire boat's just dishes and eggs.
Is it by boat? That's a good question. I don't know if it's by boat or by plane. Well, U.S. egg imports rose by 38% in the month of December due to the, you know, compared to the previous month. The last time Turkey has helped us out in this regard was back in January of 2023. So these are prepackaged.
That's not that long ago.
I know, right?
They even helped us out.
Well, we had another bird flu.
2023.
And then because remember the whole thing about chicken wings?
I didn't know Turkey was such a big chicken place.
Well, it's called Turkey.
Totally different, though.
It's a poultry place.
Have you ever seen a turkey egg?
I have not. Do they lay eggs?
I know they do.
Are we sure? They just come out as baby turkeys?
In my head, it sounds better to think that they just come out as little birds, but I'm pretty sure they lay eggs. How come nobody talks about turkey eggs?
Has anybody ever seen a turkey egg?
Have you ever eaten a turkey egg?
I've eaten a turkey leg. Those are really difficult to eat. Too many little bones. So the current deal, it involves prepackaged shipments, primarily medium-sized eggs, which are preferred for long-distance transport. So.
Well, there you go. Can I just say this?
Yeah. Getting eggs from Turkey, not turkey eggs.
Thank you. Because one reason why we don't eat turkey eggs, but we eat chicken eggs, is not only do turkeys, they produce fewer eggs, but they're more protective. So let's go for the easy.
Also, they're really harder to get.
Yeah.
Yeah, chickens, when you grab their eggs, they just kind of go, and that's it. You grab the egg, and you're like, shut up. I'm taking this egg. I'm taking your baby.
Turkeys are more protective, so they're like, don't take those turkeys.
Turkeys are mean. The chickens, they chase people.
They're not as mean as geese.
They're not as harmful. Are they more harmful than geese are?
I don't think so.
The problem with the geese, they poop too much. That's Amy Mark's Scores. I'm Chris Ranji. This has been the Egg Beat. Hour 3 of the show is next.